Welcome to Extra Points. Now here's your host, Cousin Sal, and his pal, Dave Damashek.
All right, welcome to Extra Points, part of the Extra Points Podcast Network. Cousin Sal coming to you with his dear, dear pal, Dave Damashek. Dave, it is Wednesday night. I don't know, it was almost a good, important NBA game tonight. It was New Jersey and the Sixers, and the line jumped all over the place, and it settled on the Sixers winning by six. Of course, the Nets didn't play anybody, so why should anyone play anyone at this point? I get mad, but then I'm like, oh, of course, it makes sense. Everybody's set. Let's not upset the apple cart here.
I wouldn't say that too loudly, or you're going to get yelled at by Mad Dog Russo. He's very upset. He's pining for the olden days when guys would go out there in meaningless games. I don't know. I guess I'm on the offense about it. It comes down to, imagine if you're a season ticket holder, or than that, imagine, you know, at Christmas time or whatever, you know, the old man goes out and gets tickets. Hey, I got a special one for you. You know, we're going to go see the Sixers in April. It'll be an important game. It's the one I saved up, and this is your big present. It's like, yeah, nobody's playing. It does stink. It's hard to
absolutely
defend.
Unless it stinks for the gamblers too. I mean, yes. Giannis is now on his 11th game time decision, where he dropped out, or game time decision, or wasn't even a questionable, or whatever. I mean, he's the biggest defender of that this year, but I don't know. I'm just like kind of used to it. I'm like, all right, let's just go through, pretend these games mean anything. And anyway, that line went all over the place. It was six. Once we found out nobody was playing, they were -9, -9.5. You got it early this morning, maybe at -6, -6.5, and it ended on six, and they didn't cover.
Does it feel to you, though, like that there's maybe some strategy behind this? I don't know. Sure. I could see Nash and the big three and beyond, and they're extended to their big five, their name brand guys that they have on the Nets, saying, why are we going to show the Sixers anything? We're going to be playing them again in 5 weeks in games that matter. So may as well sit these out. The good news is, Sal, I know, because you're down on one of my favorite puck seasons ever, and the NBA is limping into its postseason. The great news is we are a fortnight away. NFL draft is almost here. That's exciting too. See, there's never a dead spot on the calendar as a sports fan.
It is true. And like I said, the NFL draft is so much more important now that we hit this dry spell with NBA and NHL, with the games to where we're easing ever so slowly into the playoffs, still 6 weeks away. Big news today, Jadeveon Clowney signs with the Browns, 1 year, $10 million. I don't know. I looked at it and I'm like, you know, the Clay Travises of the world, like, oh, he was on the Titans. He was sucked on the Titans. No sack, nothing. Hasn't had a sack in 2 years. Then I look, I see this. I'm like, well, I don't ever want him to be right. So I dig up a stat. And since 2018, Clowney is in the top five in rush percentage. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Is that you get to the quarterback? He's at 25%, which is, I think he's fifth. And you go, you got Robert Quinn ahead of him. You got obviously Aaron Donald ahead of him. That's pretty good. So he could still make some plays. I think this is a good sign and a good signing for the Browns.
Yeah. And, you know, I was with the Texans and there he had a pass rush mate on the other side that made things extra dangerous. Of course, in fact, he had at least a couple of good pass rushers along with him. And in Seattle, they can get to the QB. The question for him is his health, obviously. And it has limited his production. He's never even had 10 sacks. What are we talking about with this guy? Yes, he is a monster when he's healthy. The problem is that he's rarely healthy, and I guess that leads to questions about motivation and all that. That a lot of people are excited, though. Like, yeah, but Myles Garrett's going to draw the double teams, and that'll free Clowney up. It's like, wasn't that the case when he was playing with J.J. Watt?
Sure.
Wasn't that the same basic thing? Listen, if you're the Browns, if you're a long-suffering Browns fan, you had the indication of cause for optimism in January. You've had the best, at least in that division, if not the whole NFL, you've probably had the best free agency period. So, listen, these people have nothing to celebrate. Their heroes have given them virtually nothing to cheer about for 50 years.
Good, let's see. FanDuel has him coming in second place in the AFC North, second best odds at +170. The Ravens still favored at +110. I feel like we go over this three times a week. The Steelers at +360 and the Bengals at 23-1. I don't think the Clowney signing moves the needle much for those odds. I still like the Ravens. We're talking April 14th. Who'd they sign, Spaghetti? The Giants guard there, Zeigler, right? They got him. They re-signed Pernell McPhee. Am I saying that right? I think I got that right. And I don't know. They have some decent signings on that side, and I just expect a rebound year. Now, Dave, I want to talk to you about this, though.
By the way, very quickly, I know where you're going to go, but very quickly, yes. Just because, again, like most of these teams are awaiting the draft to fill out their offseason painting, and so we don't know what the Ravens are going to look like, but I don't understand, as constituted, putting the Ravens or the Steelers ahead of the Browns. The Ravens don't have a front seven put together yet, but just a free agency as we move on from that and start talking draft. The name brand guys that are out there as pass rushers, Melvin Ingram, Justin Houston may sign with the Ravens by the time you're listening to this. Then there's KJ Wright still back there, awfully productive with those Seahawks defenses.
Yeah.
Dick Sherman and Casey Hayward, two of the best cover corners in the league over the last decade. Still some bargains to be had out there, Sal.
Yeah, you're right. And in addition to the draft. Now, here's what I want to get into with you. Well, not too much, but I don't know. How do you feel about first place schedule? I think I put too much emphasis on it normally, but I think it's accurate to say that it makes a difference now, because now with the first place schedule, do you even know your Steelers made the mistake of coming in first? They have an extra game. You know where that extra game is? It's against an NFC team. I don't know if you know this, but it's an NFC team that in the division that they're not playing, one of the divisions that they're not playing. So you play everyone in your division twice. You play an AFC division, and then you play an NFC division. So the Steelers have the Seahawks.
I know. I think the Hawks have to come to Pittsburgh, not the other way around. I could be wrong, though. And if I'll fly up to Pittsburgh.
But I think this is going to... You have to factor this, I think, a little in the odds, a little in the over-unders, a little in the whole idea that there might be a little more parity. You play enough first-place teams. Okay, last year doesn't necessarily mean this year they're going to be just as good, but you play enough first-place teams, and you're going to beat each other up. And I think we see a lot more like 10 and 7s along the way as a result. Do you, or am I just thinking too much into this?
I mean, I don't know. The cynics poo-poo looking at strength of schedule at this time of the year, because we don't know if any of these teams are going to be good, but I think you can extract some.
Well, but it's always hard to repeat, right? So then that's why, maybe why, you know, it's not like we see everybody winning the division.
They have third place. The Ravens locked up the second seed.
Yeah.
And then the Browns. So, yeah, so they get the favorable schedule, you would
So the third place team is Arizona. I mean, it's no slouch when you're playing the NFC West either way, but I'm just saying some of these first place teams are going to be in a little bit of trouble, and I have not done the research, but I think it lends itself to more parity. It kind of has to, doesn't it?
It does, but I know I've said this to you before, and I'm going to say it again now. You're talking to the wrong guy about this, because I can talk myself into any team this side of the Texans making the playoffs. That's the beauty of pro football as it shakes out perennially now in the 21st century. It's like, yeah, I could kind of see the Bengals making the playoffs. I really can see that too. I can see any team being halfway decent. So
someone brought up, again, I don't want to keep mentioning him, but Clay Travis said the Bengals were 23-1 to win the North. And I was like, oh, shut up. And I'm like, oh my God, that's not bad. 23-1. Why not?
I know. The Lions are longer odds. I mean, listen, their QB is going to be a guy who almost won the MVP 18 months ago. So
Don't know why I decided the Lions are going to be my team I'm going to shit on all year. That's going to be the team starting from scratch.
That's a good one to do.
But who knows? And again, so much left. The draft, so many free agents out there.
As we transition into to one of the high-end Patriots of the 21st century, I don't like this late buzz about Belichick's plot to get to pick number four and get Justin Fields. That will upset me, Sal.
I don't think it happens, but still
the noise
part of them
is
still
there.
Looking for a way to recruit a cornerback into the taking snaps. All right, we have a guest here.
Oh, we do.
There he is. Kevin Hank.
What?
Yo.
What the hell?
Now, you can see Kevin Hench on -3, the second episode of -3 every week. He's a joy. It's a great, great listen. Please listen to that. He's on with Dave and Eddie Spaghetti, and he made his debut, what is it now, 4 weeks ago? More? Five?
Maybe five.
Right? I think we've Yeah, they're all legendary episodes. You should go back and listen to them. But to say that he's a delight is a stretch there, Sal.
Did I say that?
I would just say something that would indicate that he was a pleasure to be dealing with. And when instead he, you know, he goes,
I thought I meant delirious.
He goes at everybody.
I said delirious.
Poor Eddie Spaghetti. I'm built for it. I can handle it, Sal. But I'm worried about our friend, poor Eddie Spaghetti.
Well,
he
here's
didn't
the
sign
thing.
Off for this.
I'm worried about him too, and that's why I invited Hench on. I think in his debut appearance on Minus Three, it came up that Julian Edelman was going to make the Hall of Fame, and Hench is like, "No way, no doubt about it. I don't want to hear anything about it." Now Edelman since retired a couple of days ago, and I like Edelman. He parties with the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. Dickie Barrett, we're friends with him. He's a Jewish player. My mother's very upset when any Jewish player retires, even though he's going to sign with the Bucks in 3 days. But really, who's left? C.D. Lamb, Juju Smith-Schuster. I don't know how many Jews are left in the NFL.
But yeah, with the Schwartz brothers gone, yeah, we're really we're running out of them.
We are running out. And I'm running out of patience for anyone who says Julian Edelman belongs in the Hall of Fame. And you gave it good to Eddie Spaghetti, Hench. But I hope that since you've peered over the stats and changed your mind about this.
Which stats? The unprecedented playoff game log? Mm-hmm. I don't know. A guy named Bill Simmons sent me this playoff game log. Even I didn't know how totally dominant Julian Edelman has been. But look, by the way, do you want Brandon Marshall's 970 regular season catches in September and October? Is that what you're looking for in a Hall of Fame wide receiver? Obviously, for 20 years, the Patriots were going to the playoffs. Those games are irrelevant. Everyone knows when the season starts in New England. It's not like Jason Garrett's our coach. We know we're going to the playoffs for 20 years. And so Edelman's body of work is those games in January and February. And I'm not if you're familiar with them. First of all, yes, 300 more catches than Lynn Swann in the regular season. The only person who has more playoff catches is Jerry Rice. Okay. And then I was thinking about Jerry Rice, who has the seminal catch in 49er dynasty history. It's John Taylor. John Taylor has the most important catch in 49er dynasty
history.
Dwight
Clark, but all right.
Super Bowl. You're right. Stand corrected. Neither guy's named Jerry Rice, but Julian Edelman, Super Bowl winning touchdown catch against the Seahawks. Miracle catch that allows for the 28-3 comeback to be completed against the Falcons.
So if that catch isn't made, this isn't even a discussion. It's really that catch. Okay, Seahawks, great. But
well, if I've already brought you over,
yeah.
Stop. But there's much more to get to. Because
let me help out. This will shock you, Sal, except that you already know my opinion on it.
Yeah.
Listen, it is Julian Edelman made that catch. That's correct. That puts him on par with David Tyree. What puts him past David Tyree is the other game that Hench already mentioned, and Hench is going to get to some other stuff. The 2018 AFC title game in Arrowhead. What about that performance he put on? Okay,
First of all,
a big one in that game, but that was a bad example. But
let me just do this. Let's not do the Lynn Swann thing. Let's try to do this going forward, okay? We don't want to put crap in the Hall of Fame if it doesn't belong, right? Like, so the Mets had a GM who texted horrible pictures and things to women. So let's not just say, well, why can't Matt Gaetz be the GM for the Mets? No. Let's learn from our mistakes. Let's move on. So moving forward, who do we want in the Hall of Fame? Do we want a guy who, yes, he had great postseason. Let's just forget about the 80% of every year. 80% of his body of work is average. He never made a Pro Bowl. He was never second team. Can't we just start there and say you have to make a Pro Bowl or be second team? Isn't that
easy?
Well,
then obviously you're making the Brandon Marshall argument. You want Brandon Marshall. I want Julian Edelman. First of all, what are you going to put one guy from the Patriots in the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Who goes in the Hall of Fame? Six Super Bowls. Like, you got to pick somebody. So
guess what? He got his prize. He won the Super Bowl. That's his prize. You don't get to go to the Hall of Fame. He did great in the playoffs. What do I get? Oh, you get a Super Bowl ring. Yeah, that's good enough. You don't get to go in the Hall of Fame because you did. I don't understand. He never made a throw. What did he have? 9 touchdowns.
Okay.
He never had double-digit touchdowns.
After he allows for the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history with the miracle catch, then he converts 3rd and 9 and 3rd and 10 in Arrowhead against the Chiefs, against the Super Chiefs, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, That is a low percentage completion. Not if Julian Edelman's on your team. They ran the same exact play on different sides of the line of scrimmage. He was open by 5 yards immediately when in the most important plays of the season, he was always open and he always made the play. Unlike Welker, who's not going to the Hall of Fame, even though he has hundreds of more catches than Julian Edelman, because when it mattered most, Welker was gacking it.
By the way, you know when it mattered? You know what it mattered with Welker? I know you lambasted Spaghetti for bringing up Welker. Guess who couldn't beat out Wes Welker for like the first 3 years of his career? Julian Edelman. He couldn't crack the starting lineup.
So let me say this. Let me say this.
Hall of Famer, or he isn't.
Well, you're right. You're right. While he was not starting in the slot on his way to becoming the second most dominant playoff receiver in NFL history, he was merely Rick Upchurch returning 4 punts for touchdowns. He was awesome at everything he ever did. His last playoff game for the Patriots, he added a rushing touchdown to his resume.
I know. It's all playoffs.
And by the way, they play a terrible division.
They make the playoffs every year. And he gets the benefit because he stepped up.
They don't win one of those Super Bowls if he doesn't complete a 51-yard touchdown pass when they're down 8 against the Ravens in the playoffs. Now, I don't know. Maybe you stop watching football in January. Maybe you don't pay attention. Sal, who's coming on after me? Neil deGrasse Tyson, and you're going to ask him if Copernicus was right? Does the sun revolve around the earth?
Yeah.
Or does the earth revolve around the sun? I mean, this is settled law. It's embarrassing.
His regular season stats suck because there were so many good receivers on that Patriots team. So how could he shine in that offense in the regular? Oh, no, wait, there weren't. There were no good receivers on that Patriots team. Give it all to Brady. Oh, and he had the best quarterback of all time, but couldn't scratch together double-digit touchdowns in even 1 year or a Pro Bowl or a second.
Well, listen, you know the curse of playing in the slot. You don't post a ton of TDs, but you do.
That's your best argument. It's a different position than we're used to. He's a DH or whatever you want to call him, but in the slot position, he was the best there was. That's your best argument.
If H stands for Hall, then I'll take it.
A few things now. First of all, love the hot and timely reference to Rick Upchurch.
I know that's great.
I'm glad that Sal and I are two of the maybe five people who will get the reference. But okay, yes, a great punt returner to be sure. One, two. This all deserves to have above every other comment made. Julian Edelman isn't going to go to the Hall of Fame. I can almost certainly guarantee you of that. There's just not going to be enough momentum.
So FanDuel set a fictitious line at minus 130 against him. He's a minus 130 underdog to make the Hall of Fame. Dave, listen, you make a good living Monday through Friday, right? But do you earn any money on the weekends? You're not cutting lawns. You're not working at an art gallery. The weekends is when it counts.
I'm not Rick Upchurch.
No, it's 70% of your week is disregarded. It's how much you make on the weekends. That's where it is. That's where you got to make your money. That's the only thing we're going to judge
you on. What are you talking about? How can you're not this guy, Sal. You root for the Dallas Cowboys.
I know. This is like
you get a Super Bowl ring. You don't get to go in the Hall of Fame.
I appreciate that Sal has to take the Skip Bayless role here. I appreciate that he doesn't believe.
Minus 130. We can't have a discussion because FanDuel has it at minus 130. So you could scream and I can. I'm just sticking up for Spaghetti. Wes Welker's just as good.
Well, how about your people, Sal? Why don't you stick up for them? They've been through a lot.
I didn't hear who?
The chosen people, Sal.
Oh,
I went through that. I get it.
This is his goyim half making the argument.
I didn't know he's graded on a curve. And you got to choose him for the Hall of Fame. Well, listen. If Robert Horry,
Hall of Famer,
if he was the second leading playoff scorer of all time, obviously he'd be in the Hall of Fame. Like, I don't know what you know, Edelman. Marvin Harrison, right? Hall of Famer. Thousands of catches. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
One Super Bowl. He and Reggie Wayne, the Colts fans can share that Super Bowl, one trophy. I remember the day that Marvin Harrison had 3 catches in Foxborough, because you know who else caught the ball 3 times that day from Peyton Manning? Ty Law. That's who caught the ball 3 times. Those are the games that matter. Those are the only games that matter when you go to the playoffs every year. And when the games mattered most, Julian Edelman was second only to Jerry Rice. So obviously he should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean,
you're in a shit division. You get that bye the first week. You play in a freezing cold game the second week.
Mickey Mantle shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. That league sucked his whole career. Well, I don't understand. Well,
this is, I know. He didn't hit 50 home. He never hit home runs in the regular season. Let's disregard. He was terrible in the regular season.
All right, forget that.
Let me just say this. It makes me sick, positively sick, to be advocating for a New England Patriot.
Yes.
That's how great he was.
You understand that, Sal. You understand. This gives me no pleasure to make this argument. I am a pedigree snob. Mm-hmm. Julian Pettigrew does not have a high pedigree. He was atrocious for 16 game regular seasons.
Yes.
All the time. Yes. This is if not a unique case, pretty distinct. And the measure that went, was he one or two at his position at any season? Of course, no, he was not.
Well, but that's, man, it. One or two or three or four.
As the line goes about, can you tell the story of pro football? Can you talk about the Super Bowl era? Can you talk about the last 20 years of what the Patriots did to the rest of the NFL without Julian Edelman playing a central role in it? I mean, he was huge in the big games. And when people are like, oh, he was so bad for most of it, though. It's like everybody sleeps on the fact or chooses to ignore it when it's convenient. They only give out the one Lombardi at the end of it. So it matters who wins it.
And the guys who contribute to it continually belong
in the Hall of Fame. And let me say something else to you.
I didn't know you get a ring and a free pass to the Hall of Fame.
He didn't just get a ring. He got a Super Bowl MVP as it happened. So he got extra hardware walking out of that stadium.
He was rewarded already.
I don't know. It's a distinct case. You talk about
telling the story of football 20 years from now. You're with your grandkids. You got them on the knee. You're like, oh, why did Julian Edelman make the Hall of Fame? I'm looking at his stats. Like, yeah, never made the Pro Bowl. Well, why didn't he only have seven touchdowns? Why was that his best year? Wasn't everyone slinging the ball in the 2010s? Like, yeah, I don't know. I forgot why he's a Hall of Famer.
I find it uninspired when we start leaning on, because that what that quickly leads to is then grand total of amassed numbers and durability in a sport when you're running into people on purpose is a nice quality to have, but it does not transcend what Terrell Davis did. Give me the limited sample size. Give me the big spot moments and what they did in those moments. And by the way, the larger thing is too. This will probably reveal why I'm Julian Edelman friendly on this one, is I do think Lynn Swann, and by the way, Drew Pearson belong in the Hall of Fame, not because of their grand totals, but because of what they did in January. That's why it matters. But I think it's a bad
precedent to not get Pro Bowlers in the Hall of Fame. I just do.
It's crazy, but again, his importance to Tom Brady and that dynasty is impossible to knock down, really. I mean, it is that you can't say that
he wasn't important the those second first 3 years when he couldn't beat out Wes Welker.
I don't know. But here's the bigger issue that the three of us have talked about. All these halls of fame need to be moved up to Mount Pius once and for all, because the multiple.
No, you can't do it. You're letting a guy to make the second team All-Pro.
There are multiple standards that go on here, and they're unsatisfying. I mean, I think Edelman belongs in the Hall. I think Swann and Pearson belong in the Hall. But then why isn't Cliff Branch in the Hall of Fame? Why is Bob Greasy? We're talking about a guy who just got two rings. That was his reward. Let's move forward.
There's been a lot of mistakes, but moving forward, it's a bad precedent to not put a Pro Bowl.
I say telling the story of the NFL, whatever. I say Julian Edelman belongs in the Hall of Fame based on the numbers. Mm. The numbers are 118 receptions in the playoffs, three Super Bowl rings. I'm going to take that bet, FanDuel. He's going to the Hall of Fame. Because I'm going to let you know a little secret. The guys who vote on this, they're going to have a soft spot for a guy like that. And the greatest player of all time thinks he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Tony Romo never said that. That actually hurts his case.
Now Sal reveals why he doesn't care as much about what happens in January.
Hey, what did Romo say?
No, you said the greatest. I was making a joke. You said the greatest.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, let's cut it short.
Text Romo right now.
He'd probably say yes, but I just don't think it's a good guy. And it's also, Hinch, it's hard to take you seriously making this argument in a closet in front of all your J. Crew flannels.
I break it to the family that I'm doing a podcast in the middle of dinner, I got to go far away as possible. Sheck has seen it. Sheck has seen the rage during the recording.
Go back to dinner.
I need to be undiscoverable.
I feel bad. Your freaking Red Sox have won 9 in a row. I just feel it. I feel it's closing in again. Damn it!
I won my first bets of the year on the -3. I said Red Sox over 50.5% win total.
You were right. You said they're going to be bangers, and they scored 9.
I said Bruins are going to get killed by the Capitals on Sunday, 8-1. I'm making a lot of people money here, and I'm going to make them some more right now. Bet on Edelman to get into the Hall of Fame. Not only does he deserve it, it sounds like you're getting a good price.
Get him out of here.
You forget about people. The voters do reside up on Mount Pius. I think he was saying that there's an outsized percentage of sports writers who are also chosen people who are going to vote for.
I see.
Is that what you were getting at? Am I reading that correctly?
I wasn't going that far, but you know, the kind of people that would root for the plucky converted Kent State quarterback.
Yeah.
You're saying
hardcore Jews like Bill Simmons. I know what you're saying. I know. All right.
Devout.
Jules is my guy. He goes to the hall or I quit.
Hench, thanks for joining us. You're going to be on -3.
Anytime.
You'll be talking about it again in about 8 hours. So, just button up the vest. Get in the saddle.
It's not going to be as good because I'm going to agree with him again. But by the way, Sal, Willie McGinnis, by Hench's standard that he lays out there is accurate. First of all, it's a little weird. The Hall of Fame doesn't owe it to the 21st century Patriots to put a certain number of them in, but it is odd when you start counting them up. Richard Seymour is going to get in.
We're Ty doing Law another round in. Of this?
I'll do that with Hench on -3. I'll spare him. But Willie McGinnis belongs to too. But as they mentioned, he's the all-time sacks leader in the postseason. How's he not in the Hall of Fame?
All right, I'll let him in. That's fine.
Obviously, if Sheck is rattling off Patriot Hall of Famers, I'm not leaving. Like, that's got to stop before I click leave meeting. I was glad I was invited, but Sheck, you did a great job winning this argument without me. I'm sure Sal has a good WrestleMania analogy for what just happened to him between the two of us. But yeah. I'll leave you.
I turn heel, but if it makes you feel better, I still think Brad Marchand is half human, half rat, and he's a creep who shouldn't be allowed in the league.
All right, Hench, your daughter is screaming. She wants her Patriots vest back. Right. So go get it. All right. See you guys. See. All right, there you go. Kevin Hench, he's great. So Spaghetti, though, that's how you have to treat him. That's what
you
got to
do. Yells all the time and everything.
Go right at him, Spaghetti.
I appreciate you doing that for me so much.
That was for you.
I mean, that was really noble and honorable of you. I know he brings in like the funny Neil deGrasse Tyson references, but his humor is not going to escape the fact that he's simply wrong here. Edelman is not a Hall of Famer. So unless they change the Hall of Fame, like Sheck's been pushing for, to the Hall of All or one of those kind of things, like, you know, what are we talking about here? Is it postseason deeds or is it entire career? And until it changes,
which matter more and what do people remember more?
Well, why do you watch the regular season then? What's the point?
Because it's terribly enjoyable. What do you mean? Why?
All right. Is it enjoyable because the best players play their best? Because that's probably what they should do from week one to 17.
Like I said, that's my final point on it. I get that the numbers are unsatisfying to look at between September and December. A different standard needs to be applied here. I know it's a distinct case, but he does deserve it based on performing at his best on the biggest stage. And not as a one-off either. Santonio Holmes had one great Super Bowl. Julian Edelman had multiple postseason runs.
How about this? We have a postseason Hall of Fame. Why don't we do that? We're building the one off of Mount Pius, let's have a postseason Hall of Fame, and Edelman's a first ballot. Joel, what are you saying? You're bummed out at Dave?
I'm super disappointed. This Dave,
what?
You could never step foot in Squirrel Hill again. How could you not even mention Hines Ward should get in first? These entitled, pompous Patriot fans. Hines Ward had double the numbers Edelman.
Yeah.
Also won a Super Bowl. Also had Super Bowl moments. If Edelman is getting in, Hines Ward gets in first.
He probably agrees.
Oh, I'm not gonna. Am I gonna argue with you about Hines Ward belongs in the Hall of Fame? Obviously, he does.
No, argue with Hinch. Argue with Hinch.
He would say
I said
yes.
Also that he's not that it's all a fun exercise to debate, but he's not going to get in. Hines Ward's not in the Hall of Fame. If Hines Ward not in the Hall, Julian Edelman's not going to the Hall. That should be pretty straightforward for everybody.
I didn't even want to get into who else should be. I want to really focus on Edelman. I didn't want to look back. I didn't want to look forward. I wanted to say this is bad to let a guy with these soft regular season credentials in. That we did say though. Most clutch catch, we went over this with the Against All Odds guys, most clutch catch in Super Bowl history. First of all, Brother Bry points out that Arizona-Pittsburgh game is, I think like people thought it was a really good game. It really should be recognized as a top three Super Bowl of all time. It has two of the top six or seven plays of all time in them, I think. The Harrison return. And the Santonio Holmes catch, which I think is like 20%, I said, more difficult than the Dwight Clark catch, but similar. But the Dwight Clark catch we'll see 400 million times more than the Santonio Holmes catch. But what do you put as number one, the most clutch catch in Super Bowl?
Oh, it's funny you say that because, I mean, I've seen the Lynn Swann in Super Bowl 10 lunging at midfield and bobbling that ball. That wasn't even his best catch in that game, but I've seen that one. A million and a half times more than I will see the Santonio one. The correct answer is Santonio Holmes. Clutch, consider the moment and go back and watch. Should anybody care, you can go back and watch on YouTube or otherwise. But watch, I mean, you want to talk about nails and talk about who deserves the Hall of Fame. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald is running with Troy Polamalu and Ike Taylor chasing him, and he's watching himself on the scoreboard, and there's like 2.5 minutes to go. And I remember watching that with my old man and Mo Damashek. Oh, by the way, happy birthday to Mo Damashek.
Oh, belated, nice.
Belated shout out to the 80-year-old broad. I remember watching that, and I remember the air going out of the room, and it was like, oh, my God, we're going to biggest pessimist on a sports fan that I've ever known is my old man. A calm came over me, and I said, Seven's going to do this. He's going to take us down the field, and he's going to I knew it. Sal, I said it. You can go back and ask these old people while they're still here. Mm. And he was on the money, and so too was Santonio that whole drive. I'll remind you, on second down, he throws it to Santonio in the other corner of the end zone, and it goes right through Santonio's hands. So the next play, it goes right back to Santonio, and he makes the greatest, most –
I don't think you're right about that. I don't think you're right. Because here's how I described it. I labeled clutch is great catch, difficulty of catch plus clutch, like where it occurred in the game. I think that was a second down play with Holmes. You're not going to get
maybe
better.
It was second. It could have been. You may be right. That was second. So the first play goes to Santonio through his hand. Second down, maybe.
So like Nick Foles is a fourth down play. You don't get bigger than that for a moment. But the catch wasn't hard, right? So that was like a 4 or 5 for a catch. So if you add that, this is how I'm doing it, and which is why it's hard to not make David Tyree's catch, which was a 3rd and 5 from the 44. If that's incomplete, and there was 1,000 different ways it should have been incomplete, then it's 4th and 5 at the 44 with a minute left. You know what I'm saying? Like
I get, I get touchdown, you. And I, you know,
some of these others too. Edelman was first down.
I hear you. The Steelers Edelman very likely. Down. Right. Yeah. They don't get it. They kick a field goal and that would have been pro football's first overtime. A Super Bowl overtime. I kind of disagree. I know it's weird, but I don't think Super Bowl 43 is up there in my
really?
I know it's not my top 3. It is those plays, and Kurt Warner and company do make a couple of great plays.
Two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. You don't get that a ton. You don't get that a ton.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it should be up there. Just that game was so weird. I didn't feel like, boy, I'm watching a classic.
Yeah, you were nervous.
I know. It's hard for me to judge that one. The one that I always throw out, again, I don't know what's happened to me. It's bizarro Dave tonight because first I'm defending Julian Edelman. The one that is most slept on is Super Bowl 47 when the Ravens beat the Niners. That I don't know why people don't celebrate that as one of the three best. That game had everything in it. That's a real beauty. I hear you. Yeah. I hear you on clutch or great or whatever. I mean
that's
one
just how I ranked it. I said
difficulty of catch plus where it was in the game. And that's why I believe me, I don't want to give it to David Tyree. Right.
But that one, same as Edelman, as remarkable as both those catches are. There's a fluke factor to them.
Right.
There's an unrepeatability because of the weird bobbles and everything that makes it like, I don't know how to take that. What I do know is seven throws, a perfect ball. I mean, that is just such a crazy throw.
Yeah.
Anytime, any week of the season, it's with 35 seconds left in the Super Bowl. And for San Antonio Holmes to reach out and get both toes down and never have the ball even bobble as he goes to the ground, I mean, it's the greatest play in Super Bowl history.
If you're shooting a movie and you're looking for a fluke catch, right? You get the David Tyree. That's the one. You're not going to get more incredible and also a lot of luck involved. If you're shooting the movie in terms of, I want to show pure athleticism from the quarterback and the wide receiver and in a big, big spot, I think it's Santonio Holmes. I guess that's maybe how I would look at it.
Spaghetti
has to say Tyree, right?
I'm a little all over the place, but I will say, even though I don't think 43 is the greatest Super Bowl overall, one and two, the two greatest plays in Super Bowl history are James Harrison's 99-yarder and Santonio Holmes.
Yeah.
Tyree was a weird, fluky, lucky thing. It's hard to put that ahead of either one of those. I'm sorry, Spaghetti. Please go
ahead,
in
Spaghetti.
Your,
go ahead.
In
we'll
your tank you top. Grown man in a tank top.
I mean, I'm in the comfort of my own home. I'm relaxed. I'm podcasting with the group. I don't want to dress up. It's Tyree.
You to dress up.
I don't care if it's a fluke. He still made the catch. I mean, I also think it's grasping the ball on your helmet while a guy like Rodney Harrison, who is a known hard hitter, is pulling you down and you still land. And the ball doesn't bounce from the force of you hitting the field. To me, is athleticism, you know, beyond belief. I think it's more than just the sheer luck.
You know what sucks about that? And that was one of, I feel like every Super Bowl, I can't root for either team. That was certainly one of them. We know enough mass holes around here, and I can't root for the Giants. But the play before, Dave, and Spaghetti, you remember this.
Asante Samuel's
hands. Right through. So what are you going to do?
The other play I'll say too quickly is that after Plexico catches the go-ahead touchdown, Brady is, you know, whatever they are, 85 yards from winning the game.
Yeah.
And Brady throws one that had to have been 70 air yards to Randy Moss. And Randy Moss reaches out for it at the 10 or 15 yard line of the Giants. And he just misses catching it. And would have been, that would have been the greatest catch of all time. But he didn't catch it.
I'm getting to note that Hench is—he's in the Zoom. He's trying to—he wants to get back to defend Nikhil Harry, but we're not going to let him in. We can't.
It's enough.
We just can't do it.
Him.
No, he's hiding in our floorboards right now.
I like the thing that he's wrong about is—and I've heard this one floated—is but Tom Brady thinks he should get in, and Tom Brady's the greatest of all time, and it's like, that hurt his case? Aren't Mark Clayton and Mark Duper, diminished a little bit? It's like, we had Dan Marino throwing it to you. No wonder you were so productive. Isn't that the same logic? I think it's backwards when people are throwing it out. Brady thinks he deserves it.
Yeah.
What's Brady going to say? No, I don't think he deserves in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm glad he's gone, Hinch. All right, so what else do we have with football? Oh, an assault charge against Aaron Donald. Do you see that the guy who's charging him? I don't know why I'm an idiot, but the first thing I think is, why would anyone start trouble at Aaron Donald? That's my thought whenever I see one of those things. But there's probably more to it.
Dave, South, you remember you, me, Kimmel, the whole gang down at down in the South Side, walking on the street late at night. That's where we were. That's where that happened.
Is that
right?
Remember
when we were out when it was really crowded and there were all those? It has changed a little bit over the decades since I've been hanging out in Pittsburgh on the South Side. It's really like in the last 15, 20 years, the streets are jammed and it feels really young. And I felt really old when we were walking down there in the middle of the night. And I remember, this is absolutely true. We're walking down Carson in the South Side. And there were a group of attractive young women walking towards us. And the one just like, as we got within like 15 feet, just pointed at me and went, "You're old."
I do remember that.
Yeah. Like, what? What happened? I'm from here. I'm trying to show my out-of-town friends a nice time, and you're calling me old.
Wait a minute. How old were you? Were you even 30 yet?
I was past 30, yeah. But
you were?
Whatever age I was. What a humiliation.
Wait a minute.
Oh, you were past 30? Was it like 17 years ago? I guess you're past 30. All right. Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun trip. And she's right. Oh, boy. Wait, imagine if she saw us now.
But yes, I mean, yes, bad stuff happens when the sun goes down on the south side with the crowds and the booze and otherwise and Steelers. A lot of guys have gotten in trouble. When you hear about the Steelers in trouble, it's generally down there, right, Joel? And
is that where it is?
Fellow Pittsburgher. But yes, who tangles with Aaron Donald walking down the street?
Now, can he say I'm defensive player of the year? Everything I do is defensive. It was self-defense. He can't claim that, right? You can't do that.
Shouldn't the guy have been a little more banged up actually? Or did Aaron Donald just give him a warning shot to the eyeball? And it was like, look at the damage I can do. Look at what I can do with one punch to you. Recognize that if I throw another one, that will be the end of your life. Is there a worse guy in sports? Literally, is there a worse guy in sports you can think of to do that to than Aaron Donald? I was trying to think about in football. Is there anybody who would be like, you just made an even bigger mistake of messing with Aaron Donald?
Dominican Sue is on the same level, right?
Yeah, I guess that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
In sports, I mean, a lot of the MMA guys who just have.
I guess any of your combat guys would.
Miles Garrett, apparently, depending on what kind of weapon he's using.
But just don't wear your helmet if you're getting into the ring with him. He'll use it again.
Yeah. Switching to the lighter side, Aaron Rodgers is hosting Jeopardy. They have a bunch in the can, and now they're rolling these out. I think he's fine. But every day there's like another hilarious clip emerged of Aaron Rodgers hosting. Like, I've not seen one yet. I don't know what's hilarious. I think it would be good. He'd be just fine hosting Jeopardy. But oh my God, the accolades, and our friend Harry has a crush on him. He loves his hair and everything else. But I make him a 3-1 underdog to host full time. Does he do? He seems like he's really into it.
Yeah, he's making no secret about it. The guy who made the most money ever there, the blondish guy who's funny on social media. I can't think of his name, I'm sure.
Oh, Ken Jennings?
Ken Jennings. Seems like, make him the host. Doesn't that seem like justice being delivered? Yeah. I resent this. I got to tell you, everything goes back to me, as you know, Sal, in my own brain. And I just resent it. And on some level, I think it's your cousin Jimmy Kimmel's fault. It all started like when although he wasn't a big celebrity when he was Ben Stein's money sidekick guy or the host or whatever. But somewhere along the way, it became that, why did celebrities become game show hosts? That's what I was born to do. If there's anything that I would be good at in this world, think about what you want in a game show host. Think about
Are you reading questions or are you spinning a wheel?
You got to be like kind of not trustworthy. You know, you got to be something shady about this guy. A little smart alecky. I don't know if we're supposed to fully believe him, but I don't hate him anyway. I mean, I don't know if I like him either. I don't know if I trust him, but there's something about him that, like, this feels like I'm doing that. This guy's a shady dealer somehow. That's what you want. That's what Damashek could be.
I see a lot of Steve Harvey in you. I really do. It could be you. It could be you. I'll tell you who it shouldn't be. Kevin Hench. That guy's the worst. Anyway, add a little excitement to your sports watching experience by betting on all the action on FanDuel Sportsbook. There's a reason why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook app. Is simple to use, great odds on different betting markets, unique fun types like same game parlays, exclusive always on promotions such as enhanced odds, boosts on the biggest events to let you get more action out of every game day. And if you win, they get you your winnings safely in as little as 24 hours. And right now, Dave, I know you know this because you read this on -3, but you know that FanDuel is letting you place your first bet risk-free up to $1,000. Just place your first bet on anything. FanDuel refunds you up to $1,000 in site credit. Wow. What good guys and gals over there at FanDuel. FanDuel Sportsbook. If you've never tried it, what are you waiting for? Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started and be sure to sign up with promo code Extra Points so they know that we sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code Extra Points. You know, I wasn't going to do this, Dave, but I'll give everyone a pick if they hopefully listening to this by Thursday morning. The Mets win 5-1, so they're destroying the Phillies. And guess what happens tomorrow? Guess who's on the bump, Dave?
Your
Jake
boy.
Jake DeGrom. Get-away game. getaway game. I didn't see the number for this because it's not up yet. I saw that the Mets are like minus 240. Stay away from that because they don't hit for DeGrom, but you don't want to bet the Phillies. What you do want to bet is the Mets under 4.5 runs. They scored 5 today. Everyone went around the carousel, around the bases, around. They don't hit for this guy. I don't know what he did to this team, but it's going to be 1-1 in the seventh inning when he has 85 pitches, and then the bullpen's going
to
blow.
There have to be some people. You must know them, and you might even be one of these guys. Did you get into a thing of
disgusting
like,
already.
Well, this can't go on every time he starts the game, so I'm going to bet it again, and now I'm going to double it, and now I'm going to double on that one. And people have to have done that. Mets enthusiasts had to have tried to ride the ground. Like, well, the law of averages makes this right eventually, right? And it just never did get right.
I got to every little angle of it. Jeff Schwartz was with me last year on this. We bet the Mets in the first 5 innings. That was okay for a minute, right? Because you figure, all right, they'll have a 2-1 lead, then the bullpen blows it. No, it would be like 1-0 or 1-1 or something. So that caught up to us. There's just no way. You just have to stay away. You have to close your eyes and pray that they put 3 on the board before the seventh inning and that the whole the bullpen holds on.
So but you're saying suck. Do not. So instead of giving a bet, you're saying go under is what you're.
Yes. Go under the. I think it's going to be 4.5 runs for the Mets. That's their team total. I say go under. Maybe we'll get lucky. They'll win 4-3 or something.
Well, you know, my favorite bet, I'm going to keep riding it, Sal. It's individual NHL player goal scoring props. This is where it's at $1,000. You get really nice long odds unless you take the 1 or 2 top superstars of any given team. If you go, even their line mates are going to give you plus odds. And we did it last night, the -3 gangs, Spaghetti, Meatballs, and Damashek all offered up. Me and Meatballs both hit with our picks there and made some money. Hopefully you followed along with that. I did stick my neck out on Wednesday night and said the Blues were going to break the Avs hot streak and bet the Blues money line. That didn't look like that worked out.
I like that too. The Parlay Kid had that as well. He had the Blues to make the playoffs at plus 240 last week, and now they're even, but they did lose tonight. Yeah, they lost to Colorado. I had that as well.
Dang.
Not good.
Yeah, but look it over. You got a big night of puck going on Thursday night. Just go through, look at a game that you find palatable. And go in there and pick a player or two and throw a little something on them. It makes the game lots of fun to watch.
Well, there's nothing up in the player props department for the NHL for Thursday yet because we're doing this Wednesday night. But you'll have picks on -3, like I said.
Yes.
If Kevin Hench lets you speak, maybe you'll get a pick or two in there. Carlos
Rodon. He's just so mad.
Is a no-hitter for the White Sox. Carlos Rodon. Wow. All right. Huh. Remember that used to be a big deal? Like a no-hitter?
I think without knowing any specifics,
yeah.
I mean, I don't even know what compares to that exactly in sports. Like what achievement, single game achievement would you most like to attend? It's not your guy doing it, your team doing it. I always would love to attend
a perfect game.
Yeah, it would be obviously.
I came close. I was there with Brusca. Pedro Martinez jumped from the dark side and was pitching for the Mets, and he got to 8 1/3, and we're like holding each other and all that nonsense about, oh, you can't mention it. It's like, okay, we haven't mentioned it in 30 years and it still hasn't worked. Maybe we start to mention it in the 5th or 6th inning. A no hitter would be great to attend. Was this a 7 inning game, Joel, or 9? You never know anymore.
It was a 9, yeah. But Dave, the thing about seeing a no hitter is you'd have to go to a baseball game. So
yeah. And you can't be making out. Otherwise you miss the whole thing. Depending on which way your torso is.
You're not in charge of what I do. I do as I please. I'm a grown man. You know where I was, though? I was in the igloo. I think it was 1988, December 31st, 5 o'clock puck drop, if memory serves. I was there to see Mario Lemieux score 5 goals 5 different ways. Even strength,
power play,
shorty, empty netter, and penalty shot.
Interesting.
Never will be repeated.
Nice.
Yep.
Back to basketball. We talked about that Nets-Sixers game. How about Anthony Edwards? So A-Rod has moved from the Mets to the Minnesota Timberwolves in a quest to own a team, a professional franchise. Same thing, Mets, T-Wolves. Anthony Edwards, -125 favorite for Rookie of the Year, thanks to LaMelo Ball getting hurt, did not. It's a hilarious video, too. You should watch it rather than just listen to me. But he did not know who A-Rod was. And immediately I get annoyed because I'm like, because it makes me and you and everyone look old. Like, oh my God, that girl on the street on Carson Street was right. We are old. and Anthony Edwards isn't, he should know A-Rod. But should he know A-Rod? How old is he? Is he 19?
It's one of those things. Like I always say, like my wife is like, you know who Peyton Manning is. You may not know, like, athlete. Like, I mean, how can it be that you don't know that your brain doesn't absorb? Right. I don't know anything about, I've never watched the Kardashians. I know who all the Kardashians are. I may not know their first names, but I can tell you, oh yeah, that's one of the Kardashians there. It's weird when your brain, whether you wanted to or not, is going to sponge up stuff that's in the zeitgeist. Well, I don't know how that's possible. You wouldn't superstar. Know A-Rod?
Yeah, you're a sports superstar. You have to think, like, you not knowing the Kardashians, I mean, you're not in that genre. Like, doesn't he watch SportsCenter? Doesn't he watch any highlights of anything? A-Rod is...
Yeah, right, right.
A-Rod's on Two Network. Like, he jumps all around. I know he retired when, like, he was 15. I'm trying to figure this out. 15 years old? That's not that
sound
young.
About right. Yeah. It's strange, but maybe it's justice being delivered, delayed, but finally coming through. This is what he gets for taking somebody else, another successful athlete's. He was A-Rod before Aaron Rodgers was A-Rod.
Oh,
and maybe A-Rod shouldn't get to host Jeopardy because he stole A-Rod's name and has created this confusion for a potential rookie of the year in the NBA named Anthony Edwards, which then begs the question, which Anthony Edwards could do the other Anthony Edwards job better?
Oh, the actor.
Would Goose and ER and Revenge of the Nerds star Anthony Edwards be a better NBA player? Mm. Or would NBA player Anthony Edwards make a better Goose for Maverick up there?
I like how you say begs the question. No one is begging this question at all. No one's even
wait till I ask it. Slightly asking. He loves this kind of question. This is right up his alley.
Well, Jim, what did you say about Anthony Edwards? I had forgotten about this. You're right, though.
Right before the draft, one of the questions about him that was like one of the negatives was that he didn't really love basketball. They said he didn't really like watch it. I don't think he really watches sports in general. So
it's got to drive a coach crazy, though.
Yeah. That's why I joined the Navy and started going out on those air carriers.
That's right.
His friend Matt. but it did get him Meg Ryan, a young Meg Ryan.
Different guy.
See, now I'm like Anthony Edwards, the other one. I don't know which A-Rod is which. I don't know either. That should have been the follow-up. Do you know who the other A-Rod is, at least? Do you know either one of them?
Right. Well, maybe he's a Jeopardy fan. Who the hell knows? He should by now. He should know J-Lo's boyfriend. Like, that's right.
Right. That's right. Exactly. How do you not walk by in a grocery store, his face on a magazine? Right.
So many opportunities. Pete Rose turned 80 today, and I'm not going to mention the site, but he's now selling picks. He's selling, how much is he selling them for, Joel? Like $90 or something? He's selling a package of picks, baseball picks. I can't believe this took so long. And I won't mention again the site, but he turned 80 and celebrated. Maybe someone said to him, you know what? When you turn 80, this is what you got to do. Maybe it was on his bucket list or something. And $89 a month, you get Pete Rose's lousy picks. They weren't good 30 years ago, but miraculously, they're going to turn around. They're going to make you. It's not like you meet him or anything, right? I mean,
They weren't good. That part of the story? Is that he was a crummy gambler, too.
Oh, his ledger was worse than mine. Minus is all over the place. And really, that is the bottom line. That's why you should. I'm not going to say people should never gamble. That's why people say you should never gamble. A guy with the baseball intelligence of Pete Rose couldn't figure it out to the tune of minus hundreds of thousands of dollars, but we're supposed to do it. Either way, Pete Rose plus 30 and he's 80 years old. And now he's selling picks, but I wrote about it in my book. I don't know if you remember, Dave, I interviewed Pete Rose and this is what the hypocrisy is great. But Tony Romo's cousin ran this convention, this sports convention, right? So it was like a fantasy sports convention in Texas. And he's like, I'll pay you to come out. I was like, don't pay me. Just get me an interview with Pete Rose. I feel like I have a sports gambling podcast. It's crazy that I haven't interviewed Pete Rose. He has a book out and everything. So I go out there. He's like, done. I'll set it up. I go out there. I read his book. Right before I sit down with him, Romo's cousin, Andy, says, oh, don't mention you're hosting a sports gambling podcast because he doesn't know. I was like, great. That's terrific. But anyway, I had read the book, and so I kissed his ass about everything. It was a love letter to his father, and he's talking about his minor league days and everything. So I knew enough about it, and he was not really impressed that I knew it. But then, like, I see his handler circling with balls for him to sign. So I'm like, I only have a few minutes left here. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna put on. And he writes about it in the book. He writes for about 3 pages. He writes about the gambling scandal. And I said, Pete, I read the book. I'm complimenting him now. I said, I think you had a great mind. I think you got bored. I think that's what happened. You were bored being a manager. You have numbers running through your head. I mean, he remembered his batting average in double A in 1959 in upstate New York, you know? So I was like, wow, he's a math whiz. That's what happened. That's why you started gambling. I think you got bored. And he got mad at that. He's like, look, what is what happened. That was 30 years ago. And no one on this podcast cares about what happened 30 years ago. I'm like, all right, well, we just did 10 minutes on what happened 60 years ago when you were in the minor leagues, but I can guarantee you they do care. And he's like, all right, so I'm not going to ask that question. And speaking of questions, you have one more. And then I'm leaving.
What? I didn't know. I've never heard this story.
I was like, what the hell did I do? And so I dig deep, and I know it can't be a legitimate question. So I said, all right, I have one more question. I got one more question. I was like, do you think we'll ever hang out again? And that was it. He ripped the microphone off, walked away. You could hear the rumbling. And that was that. And so then I was like, oh, that sucks. But I'm running it anyway. And then as I'm walking away, I'm thinking, oh, you know what? In a way, he was ambushed because he didn't know it was a sports gambling podcast, even though it was one of 20 questions was sports gambling related. I was like, then I started to feel bad for him, right? And I get stopped by someone who recognized me at Kimmel, and I talk to them for 5 minutes. And then after that, I have to meet the rest of the family on the other side of the convention. So on the other side of the convention, I walk up, and my kid Harrison is taking a swing, and who's putting the ball on the tee? Freaking Pete Rose. I'm like, oh, this is great. I get my phone out, and Harrison now is like 5 at the time, and he hadn't used a tee in like 2 years. He's using like coach pitch or machine pitch. So the tee is screwing him up, and he bangs one off the tee, and the ball like goes like 3 inches. And Pete Rose looks at him and says, take a hike. But he says, take a hike to this 5-year-old. And he's like looking around like, what did I do wrong? The same look on his face that his old man had on his face like 20 minutes before. And he's very upset. He's like, he told me to take a hike. I was like, he's a terrible dude. And I ran the podcast and he's 80 now. So there you go.
Wow. I did not know. Wow. That's stunning because he seems like such a charmer, generally speaking. Sheesh.
And now he's selling gambling picks. So what the hell? What is it? Which is it?
That's crazy. Outside of Cincinnati, and even there, I assume some people are a little raw about him. They're kind of pious fans, so I imagine they don't love that he bet on baseball. But it's funny because I once spoke with Pete Rose when I was on the Adam Carolla radio show.
Oh.
He came in for whatever, I guess, to shill a book or whatever. And he had something in the research notes indicated that he was well known for having a giant wiener and was a great cocksman for the Red Legs. And it's like, Pete Rose, look at Pete Rose. So I got into it with him about that. And I was like, I'm like, if you had to, if Wonder Boy broke at the plate and you had no other option, could you just go with what God gave you at the plate and maybe bang out a hit? He died. He went crazy.
Really?
Oh, he thought it was so funny. Thought it was hysterical.
Wow.
And was laughing and laughing. I'm like, so you were the biggest? Like, you were the biggest in the locker room? And then Carolla's like, you're the biggest one. You're bigger than anybody on. Better Joe Morgan. Ken Griffey. You're bigger than all those guys. I was the biggest one I ever saw. Oh, except maybe for Tony Perez. I don't know why it matters more. Okay, so he's big in the pants. I don't know why now, anytime I see the Big Red Machine highlights, it's like, Tony Perez, big man, more ways than one.
That's great.
I guess I had, all in all, a better...
Yeah, you got all the laughs out of him for the last 30, 40 years. That's amazing. Good job by you. Well, he's selling picks now if you want. Oh, Jim. Oh, boy, this is a special treat. All right. Uh-oh. Yes, it's time now to play the game that's sweeping the nation, where we guess how greedy celebrities are. Right now, it's Cammy over under.
Ooh.
Grab some money from a jar. Get a message from a star. The price is what we really wonder. It's Cammy over under.
What a great job under. By Dick Banks. I mean, we missed the Grammys, right? We just had the Grammys. Right?
Wow, and didn't even get nominated, right?
Yeah, that's sad. It's sad. All right, all Jim.
Political, that crap.
Yeah, you're right. I imagine you want to do Pete Rose here, right?
Of course.
Okay, so you have to assign a value, and Dave and I will guess if it's over or under that amount.
Pete Rose, over under, $200.
Ah, I'm going over. I'm going. He's a whore. He's an 80-year-old whore.
I mean, you literally could find him in random malls in Vegas a decade ago. Right. Sign pathetic. Yes, he's desperate to make as much. I hate the. I'll go under just to go really? Against Sal. But yeah, in my heart, I'm going up.
I can't imagine. I think this is hundreds of dollars off. Go ahead, Jim.
Pete Rose is under
what?
$150.
Really?
The volume business for 14.
I guess so. Well, I'm never buying one. What does he tell everyone to take a hike? What does he do? What's
he
involved?
He says one question.
You have one question. Go. I don't know though. Would you rather have picks from Pete Rose for $89, like for 2 months of picks from Pete Rose, or one cameo? Hey, he's an old jerk.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah,
my mind's spinning. I don't know yet. As the repeat champion in our fantasy football league, I have kickout powers come September again. And last year, I kicked Simmons out with Fred Lynn. All of a sudden, it'd be kind of fun to kick Sal out.
You shouldn't have said anything. Why'd you say anything? You think he's making it to September?
I think it would be awfully uncomfortable if I kicked you out.
Well, all these bad things said about Pete Rose, I still put him in the NFL Hall of Fame over Julian Edelman. I do. I think he makes... he's in the WWE Hall of Fame, isn't he, Jim? He made some Hall of Fame. Dave, nope. Minus
one of the
three.
Great clips, one of the great WWE moments in history when Pete Rose gets into the squared circle.
Yeah.
For real. Really one of the
funniest things. Times. They kept bringing him back. Like he'd
City
up,
of
like,
losers. He gets into Boston. City of losers. How about it? And everybody boos him.
You want great wrestling talk. Listen to Against All Odds. It'll be posting when? Tonight? The same time as this, probably. Brian Gewirtz and The Miz, and they go at it. They're arch enemies outside the ring. Brian was a WWE head writer for Raw for many years, and The Miz resents him, and Brian resents The Miz just as much, and we go at it for an hour. And they're in that League of Leagues, Dave, that you talked about.
Like there was a lot of shouting and arguing on all these podcasts.
Craziness.
Today.
Yes.
We had Hench, and great news is if Hench didn't scare you off with that little hors d'oeuvre, guess what? Mm-hmm. The main course comes at you on Thursday, and every Thursday, the second episode of Minus Three with Hench. We'll chop it up. NBA East, NHL East, all things East, AFC East, NFC East, AFC North, breaking it all down for you as the NFL draft draws near. And speaking of that, our old pal number 24, Ike Taylor, joined us on the early episode this week to talk all things AFC North. He really is a sharp football mind and talent evaluation and everything else. He is wrong about bringing back Roethlisberger. They had no other choice.
Well,
but anyway, that's a great
right.
show.
At least he gave you choices. He did give you choices. If they did bring him, I didn't like him. I didn't think
I know.
Dwayne
well,
Haskins
that's the
was a
everybody
good choice.
Has the, it is the classic. They got to move on from this guy. To what? I don't have the answer to that, but they should move on from this guy. Uh-huh. So anyway, Ike was great fun as always, and he and I are going to go ride horses apparently soon.
Yeah, I always thought about his thing was these players are young, so you might as well lose a season, bust up a seat, right? Like, I don't know.
He thinks they're delaying it because the other teams are young. Their starting QBs are nice and young, and the Steelers are going to lose a year. And by the time the Steelers do land, even if they're optimistically, they finally land the next franchise QB to replace Roethlisberger in 2022, 23, 24, however long it takes. That's another year of Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, and Joe Burrow, all getting close to the peak of their primes. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of assumptions, a lot of optimism for the other three teams, and a lot of pessimism for the team he played for. If you buy what he's laying out, it's too much.
It's more than too much considering it's April 14th. But I'm glad we're talking about, honestly. We got this is it. The draft is coming up. Good stuff. 2 weeks from Thursday. By the time you listen to this, we're 2 weeks away. Like Dave said, listen to Minus Three. Listen to Against All Odds. Laugh Lines was really good this week with Rachel Bonetta and Paul Virzi. And what else did we do? Joel, Jim. Oh, Lemon Pepper Parlay. What do we do? Card Wars. So many damn podcasts. Go to extrapoints.com. You get free picks every single day from the Degenerate Trifecta and Jen Piacenti and Martin Weiss and others. I think Jerry Ferrara throws some picks in there as well. So a reminder to everyone out there, you may feel like underdogs, but please remember, you're all my favorites. Take a hike.